Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew, where we serve a weekly menu of industry commentary based on what the market has to offer. I'm Andrew Friedman from Tokeland.com.
I'm Jimmy Bradley from The Red Cat.
We are very excited about this week's show. Before we introduce our guests, we're going to say that it's only our second show, Jimmy, but we're already going out of sequence. Usually we do our opening dialogue at the beginning of the show. This week's bit of a third rail topic. It's the Per Se review that ran this week. Jimmy and I are going to save our thoughts about that for the end of the show and move right into this week's topic. Author Kat Kinsman, who's an old and dear friend, and has written the book High Anxiety. There's a comma in there, High Anxiety. Life with a Bad Case of Nerves, which is due out in May, has recently launched the program Chefs with Issues. It's founded on a web-based survey, which if you're a chef or you're in this industry, you can take by visiting chefswithissues.com. The program aims to shed a light on the subject of mental illness in the pro kitchen and related environments. We'll let Kat tell you about that in her own words in just a moment. We're also joined by Chef Jesse Schenker, chef at Reset and the Gander, who wrote his own book, All or Nothing, about dealing with some of the issues that are tackled by Kat's program. And also by Frank Crispo, an industry veteran, and the chef owner of Crispo Restaurant in New York City. Welcome all. Thank you for being here. Kat, you know, I think if we could, in your own words, why don't you just tell us about this program that you just recently launched and what your ultimate goal is with it?
Sure. Yeah, I launched this about a week and a half ago because I'm a food writer, have been for a long time. And when I worked at CNN, I started writing about my own struggles with mental health, depression, anxiety mostly. What happened out of that was when I started to do interviews with chefs, you know, whether for CNN or for Tasting Table, there would become a point in the interview where the chef would want to go off record, pull me off in a corner and say, like, hey, what you're dealing with, I'm dealing with too. And that happened over and over and over again, to the point where I thought, this is really an epidemic and we need to do something about it. So my New Year's resolution was to launch this website where I'm helping people share the stories of their struggles with addiction, mental health. And it's not just chefs, it's front of house, it's farmers, it's food journalists, everybody who come together over this, you know, common thing that we love. And what's happened thus far, I launched it with a couple of stories and a survey about mental health that people could answer anonymously. Anonymously or with their name tied to it. I think I launched it about 10 days ago. I've gotten, I think, 500 responses so far. And it just really hammers home the point that this is so, so prevalent and we need to be having a conversation about it.
Yeah. I'm just curious, from what you've read through so far, are there any big surprises to you that kind of jump out, or is it more or less what you expected from the conversations you'd already had? What's sort of for you the, you know, so, you know, if you had a, you know, running headlines, what's the one that's sort of, you know, up in, you know, bold type in your brain right now?
That stigma is killing people. Absolutely. The huge response that actually shocked me was I asked people, okay, were you able to speak about this publicly at work? And vast majority of people know, but I asked them what was the reason, and the big answer, I think it was something like 75-80%, was I don't want to be thought of as weak. And I don't want to be thought of as crazy. I don't want to be bullied. And the fact that this means that people are doing this to each other. And if they had any idea how widespread this is, they would have a lot more compassion for each other.
Jesse, this is, you know, what Kat just saying. This is something you and I have talked before. We did an interview on Tokeland, almost exactly about this time last year, about your book, All or Nothing. You know, in your own experience, when you hear Kat say this, does that resonate with you, this idea of a stigma of this being something that sort of people just don't want to really talk about or feel that they'd be judged for?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, for me growing up in and out of rehab and just, you know, being in kitchens and you know, there's a lot of shame and guilt that's tied to you know, mental health, addiction, and, you know, people are very much judged. And, you know, it stems close to home. I mean, you could be judged from your parents, your siblings, your closest friends. And, you know, so I feel for me, like getting in the kitchen and working in the restaurant industry was almost like this. It's almost a way of self-medicating because you're working nonstop and you're almost distracted. You know, but there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of, you know, people tend to go there when they have nowhere to go. You know, like I don't think people end up in the restaurant industry on purpose. You know, it's kind of this crazy accident, but it really, you know, it's a scary thing. And I think if more people that had, you know, somewhat of a following would step up and kind of make a stand and say, listen, I'm fucked up. Let's, you know, we could fix this, you know, like bring something to the table where people can gather around it and really get behind it and not judge it so much.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I'd love to get your reaction to this, Frank. You know, I've been working on a book about the, I'll call it the sort of genesis of the American chef culture, which happened in the 70s and 80s. And to me, there's a real interesting chicken and egg question here, right? So, and Kat, I saw some of your writings and people have suggested, you know, that the drinking that people do is a product of the stress, right? And the nature of the work and what's expected of you. You know, what's interesting to me is a couple of things. I feel like, you know, substance abuse, or maybe not abuse in all cases, you know, in some cases, recreational drug use that never led to any problems for certain people, is part of the DNA and the origin of a chef culture in this country. I mean, a lot of people, when they started turning to kitchens in the 70s, when it was not fashionable to do that, when you were sort of, your parents thought you were kind of committing career, you know, suicide, you know, people will tell you there were a handful of factors that went into that. One of them was, you know, people were traveling a lot. You know, there was the whole counterculture movement, you know, but recreational drug use was one of those things. You know, barriers were being broken down. You know, there's also, to me, and I'd love to know if this has come up in the surveys, but there's a huge degree of ADHD among people who end up cooking. You talk to a lot of people who become chefs or cooks, and they'll tell you, you know, they didn't feel right in the classroom as a kid. They didn't do well in school. They got a job as a, you know, like a dishwasher to make some money, and they felt at home in the kitchen, right? And you know, this is really interesting. There's issues like this that run in my family, like ADHD, and I didn't know this until recently, but, you know, ADHD and addiction go hand in hand. It's a really interesting thing. But, Frank, I'd love for you to just talk about, you were around, you know, back in the day, and I'm not asking, obviously, I don't want names, or I'm not asking about, you know, anything you yourself might have been, but in terms of the culture of the kitchen, can you just speak to what I'm describing?
Well, yeah, I guess that in thinking that, you know, today against yesterday was, in my time, the stress of the business was different. We knew that if we worked hard and everybody played, there was drugs, there was drinking and all that. But the stress today is trying to meet up with, you know, who's doing what, who's on top of what. You know, the employees are turning over much faster. You know, all those things play into, you know, how we're going to be. Are we going to, you know, in 6 months you could be out of the business. You know, before it was you worked hard, you knew your craft. The stress of being a television star or trying to be something like that or the next best thing was out there, but it wasn't like it is today. So there's a lot of stress today. Back in the day, people were doing drugs, people were drinking. It was mostly recreational. There was a lot of things available. Also, there was 24-hour gyms. You can go out. You didn't have to go drinking all the time. You know, there was other, you know, today it's just business, business, business. So, you know, it's much different for sure. It's harder today for the younger person because they have so many things they want to be. You know, it's out there. You know, it's social media getting, you know, every day. And, you know, our business promotes procrastination. I mean, you always wait to the last second to do everything, right? So we're always, you know, taking more on and just waiting to do it.
There's an addiction to adrenaline.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That thing of, you know, watching. There was a great movie, actually it was a restaurant clip back in the day. What was the restaurant on 55th Street? La Caravelle, and it had, you know, Kirk Douglas walking in the front door, and then it had the action of the kitchen. And you watch this 25-minute video, and you were like, oh, wow, I got to be in there. So much action. So you're addicted to that. You know, every day you're completing something. And it was much more camaraderie back then. There was a Chef's Cuisiniers Club when we had it. There was before the Chaîne de Rôtisserie. All these clubs, there were hangouts for chefs go hanging out. There was not, it was competitive, but it wasn't like it was today. I can go work for you at La Caravelle, and you can come work for me at La Côte Basque if I was going on vacation. Everybody was different. Today, it's like, you know, they promote that Donald Trump thing, you know, attack.
Right.
I wanted to circle back to Jesse for a moment. Jesse, I heard or read somewhere you said something like you can't keep what you have unless you give it away. And for me, I thought that was a really great one, and I wanted to hear you expound on that.
Yeah, I mean, it was something that I was told, 10 years ago when I was in early recovery. And, it clicked with me then, but... the serenity that I keep and the good feelings you kind of have when you do something good for somebody else, or, you know, whether it's hiring a new cook or feeding somebody something and watching it on their face and the reaction, there's something that you get from that. And, I guess for me, how I can really just put it simply is everyone, the saying like, oh, I'm going out of my head, I'm out of my mind. The truth is you actually go in your mind, and that's what makes you nuts. So by doing things for other people and giving things away, you're getting out of yourself, which in turn, or I should speak for myself, when I do things for other people and, I get out of my head, which and then keeps me serene and peaceful and less anxious. And, and the truth is every day, for me, the disease of addiction is like the core of it is self-centeredness, and... So by giving things away, now I don't mean literally money, but just just the message of peace and serenity, and it works.
So it's two things though. It's your words and sharing your story, and it's also, I think maybe you alluded to, giving things away at work, like teaching people and working with people, or the gratification of a job well done.
Totally. Like right now, I have an intern that's working for us through a nonprofit program, and to be honest, does he get in the way sometimes? Sure. Does he mess up product? Sure. But, having him there, he wants to learn, he's hungry, and teaching him and showing him the way is really, I get a good feeling from that. And yeah, just sharing my story. I mean, that's really why I wrote the book. So other people, if I could help, I already know that I have, but parents of addicts or addicts themselves or people just struggling in general with anxiety, anything. I mean, there is hope. Like, you don't have to suffer, so it's really what it's about.
Kat, I have a question for you, but I just saw you nodding as Jesse was talking. Is there something that comes to mind as he's saying all this that kind of resonates with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I started this own project somewhat to keep myself on track too. I don't feel good unless I'm giving something out there into the world. And I think what he has done is an exceptionally generous thing because he attached a face to it. And, I admire so much the people who are willing to put themselves out there, to attach their name and their face and their reputation to this, because it really makes it easier for everybody else. I think especially, I have to say, Andrew Zimmern has been so brave and so generous in this, because he's somebody who, a young cook can look to and think, he has laid it all bare there and talked about how he was, homeless, junkie, like, a thief, and came back from that to have this extraordinary career. And, and people can look at that and say, like, It breaks my heart for anybody to be thought of as a lost cause. There are no lost causes to me, however far gone. There's always some coming back from that. And I think to have people like Jesse, like Andrew, like some of the other people who have stepped forward, really putting a public face to this and say, like, there's still a home for you in this community, that there's a community of people who are here to help you. We are there. We have been there. Here's your path through. I've been reading Jesse's book, which is extraordinary. And there's a line in there about stepping into the kitchen and it being like Xanax to ease the anxiety and really find, peace and channel, the anxiety, the upset, the whatever it is he's feeling into those motions. If there are more people who can publicly say that and guide people and just change the course of somebody's life, I think that's so vital, important.
I'd love to talk for a minute about the, I guess, sort of the flip side of this, and how and I don't mean this in a preachy way or a judgmental way. You know, I'm thinking about a lot of fun evenings as I'm starting into what I'm about to say. But, you know, there is a glamorization of this aspect of kitchen life. You know, I think a lot of young cooks are drawn to, you know, the post-service rituals, to going out after service and, you know, drinking a lot. And this has been, again, something that's been part of the culture, not just even in this country, but for a long time. And, you know, we were getting ready to do this show, and I was reminded of something, which was, you know, I have blacked out once in my life, and it wasn't in high school, and it wasn't in college. It was when Jimmy and myself and Tom Valenti and Tony Bourdain gave a talk at the Culinary Institute. It was a talk that was done on a Friday night, and after the talk, we went across the street to the local student hangout, and every student in that bar sent over 4 shots of Maker's Mark, right? And it was really interesting to me that first, I mean, it was very sweet and it was very generous, but also that that was sort of the sort of currency of connection, right? That that was this thing. And, you know, even myself, my plan was to buy one beer and nurse it all night because I knew I wouldn't be able to keep up with these guys, but I wasn't going to not do the shot, you know?
Yeah, 12 shots later, it wasn't so sweet.
And, you know, that it's really interesting. But there is this aspect that I think, you know, with good reason probably, that people are drawn to it. It seems kind of wild. It seems fun. It is often for some people for whom it's not a problem. But I'd love, Kat, let's start with you. Maybe we could go around the horn. But how do you feel about this aspect of the life and how it's been sort of promoted as part and parcel of being a cook?
You know, out of these like 500 responses I've gotten, I've only gotten one that was really super negative, and it was an anonymous one. I've set this up so people can respond anonymously, but he was like, who the fuck do you think you are thinking you can come into our kitchen and try to tell us what to do? First of all, I'm not telling anybody what to do. I have no desire to tell anybody you have to change this culture, because I haven't worked in kitchens. I love chefs. I love front of house people. And, you know, I came to it because I do bridge the topics of mental illness and food. I'm not here to stop anybody's party, ruin their good time. What I am here to do is to tell you that if it's gotten to be too much for you, there is a way out, or there are other people you can talk to. You know, I was interviewing Marco Canora yesterday for another piece that I'm writing, and he was talking about that, saying like, yeah, the after shift, you know, going out and doing all this stuff, it's so fun, and there's so much, you know, it's kind of peer pressure, but camaraderie. And he ended up paying, you know, pretty big health consequence and ended up, you know, changing the whole way that he goes out. And he said, He wasn't able to do that when he was younger, but now that he's gotten older, he's been able to step up and say, like, you know what, I'm done here, I'm out for the night. And, you know, at first he was worried about people thinking, oh, you know, you're a party pooper, you can't hang, what a pussy, you know, that kind of thing. But again, that's something that people are doing to each other. I think if somebody has to tap out, you're allowed to go on partying, you can do whatever, let them tap out if they need to for the night.
Jesse, what are your feelings on this?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Kat. I mean, I think, you know, I can only speak from my experience. I mean, I got into this. I mean, I was washing dishes at 15. I've been in this industry for a long time. Not a long time, a good amount of time. And it was always the thing, you know. Like right after service, last check goes down, stab the ticket, and it's like open the beers. You know, I mean, obviously drugs, all sorts of stuff involved. And, you know, but what I've also noticed, just being in recovery and in and out of rehab and a lot of therapy and seeing people, like, I understand this is we're talking about the hospitality industry, but it's really people. It's really people in general. Like, I don't necessarily, I think it's because of the hours, you know, it's definitely more prevalent in our industry, but, you know, you can go anywhere in any industry and really see that people just have, you know, when you have that allergy, you know, it's there. And, you know, for me in my kitchens, I mean, I set a clear boundary. I mean, I'm confident in my sobriety, and I just say, listen, I don't drink, I'm not going out, and everyone knows, and no one kind of really messes with me. You know, and if someone calls me a pussy because I don't want to go out and drink, it's like, well, fuck yourself, you know.
Well, you're also the boss, so you can fire them.
Yeah, but no, I mean, but, you know, it's kind of, you know, I think, you know, like Frank was saying, like the industry has really changed a lot. I mean, even since I moved to New York in 2006, it's changed. I mean, you know, it's not as much. I think you see a lot more people, just the way of the world, you know, with legalizing gay marriage and just so many things that are happening. I think it's kind of rubbing off on the industry almost, where if you don't drink or do have mental health problems and you are a little more, like, it's a little more accepted, I think. It's not as, I don't know, I think we're going in the right direction. I think what Kat's doing is really going to help push it forward even further, so.
Frank?
Well, you know, over the years, you know, thinking about it, you know, the staff you work with throughout restaurants and all, a lot of people, until they find their focus, sort of hang out there and they'll do things, and all of a sudden you talk to the waiter, it says, yeah, I'm an actor. I said, well, what do you do? Do you go out on auditions every day? And they think about it. No, I go out after work, and I don't really – I just call myself this. So it's the focus that people have on what they want to do. Sometimes a lot of people are in limbo. And when they're in limbo in this city, the first thing you go to is out afterwards, you know, party with your people. People who start to get their focus and they really get a hold of themselves, they get that direction, and all of a sudden that takes the priority. I mean, I've seen over, you know, in the past, you know, I always say to people, listen, you could die on Friday, reinvent yourself on Monday, as long as you give yourself the opportunity to do that. As you know, you can, if the restaurant business is not for you, find something that, what is your passion? What do you like? And, you know, and I think that what you guys are saying is absolutely true. You know, it's that help of giving people that path of saying, yeah, you know what? It isn't over. You know, yeah, okay, no problem. I did that. I'm done with it. Go on. And that's the thing about, you know, I think that, you know, people really need to know is that, you know, in the industry, yeah, it's great. You know, you can work and you can do all that. At the end of the day, I mean, the one thing I worry about is on my grave, they're going to say, well, he worked a lot of freaking hours. You know, I mean, so, you know, it's the balance. It really is.
Jimmy?
Great point, Frank. Thank you. I guess for me, you know, perhaps drug and alcohol abuse isn't so much chemical as it is a lack of a real human connection. And so my thought is if you're sharing it and you're talking about it, as Kat and Jesse are really out in the front of it, and our friend Andrew Zimmern as well, it's a very strong thing, and it's an educational tool. And, you know, I don't see the parallel between educating yourself and weakness. So my point is kind of find a way to share your story with people, and you will feel better.
We're going to take a quick break here. We're talking with Kat Kinsman, who's launched the program Chefs with Issues, available at chefswithissues.com. Chefs Jesse Schenker and Frank Crispo. Jimmy and I will be right back after this short break.
Well, she's her own. She's her own female. She's her own female. That's why I like her. I like her a lot. And she don't know that she's her own female. She's her own female, and she don't know. That's why I like her a lot. I caught a cab to the cafe.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Corin's unique store in Lower Manhattan is home to perhaps the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, plus the rarest natural sharpening stones and exquisitely designed tableware. They also host special events such as knife sharpening demonstrations and parties with New York's most famous chefs and restaurateurs. Corin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the implicit and elegance of Japanese culture to your table, be it in your home or in the finest restaurant. For more information, visit corin.com.
And we're back on the Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew. Again, we're talking with Kat Kinsman, Jesse Schenker, and Frank Crispo. Kat, you know, we kind of got on a, I guess what's sort of something that just, for whatever reasons, naturally comes up around this subject. We got very focused in the first segment on sort of substance abuse, right? But, you know, this program you've launched is not just about that. It may be intertwined with these other things. But what are some of the other big disorders or challenges, whatever word you want to put to it, that you're hearing about in these surveys that you're collecting?
Well, I asked a lot of people, you know, I asked people to answer the question, what are your primary issues that you're dealing with? I think 80% were depression, closely followed by anxiety. There's OCD, there's ADHD, there's, you know, a whole host of things that are hell to deal with. You know, being a person who suffers from, you know, depression and anxiety, I know how debilitating they could be. They're also something that really helped me focus on my own work. And a lot of the feedback I've been getting from people is that this thing that makes it hell to be in their body makes them really great at work. If you're a super anxious person, you might be hyper-focused at work. If you have OCD, you know, being in a kitchen and being able to pay attention to those minute details is the thing that really soothes you to be able to be in that kind of order and that kind of system. So it's sort of this Ouroboros of, illness and saving yourself. So I think the profession tends to draw a lot of people who have these particular issues, and they're using the work itself to medicate, which I think that's pretty healthy to do, to be able to find a profession where, you can really feed all these different parts of yourself. It's when the balance gets screwed up that it becomes a problem.
Well, to that point, I've always been struck at how many people who end up working in professional kitchen, I'm talking about some people who ended up being some of our best chefs in this country, came into the kitchen not because they love food. They came in there as a high school job, as like a dishwasher, and they just fell in love with the setting, you know, which is kind of reflects a little bit what you're saying. There was something about that environment, and I think there also is very much this unspoken, you know, chefs aren't really known for necessarily emoting. It's not one of the top five things they're known for. But I think there is this sort of tribal nature of being in a kitchen. Whether or not it's spoken, people who are in a kitchen kind of feel like they found this tribe or this pack or this family that sort of, you know, they feel a kinship with. And I think part of what you're describing is what the basis of that kinship is. I think in a lot of, Jesse, you're nodding. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, you say emoting, it's funny. Like my wife says, you don't speak, like what's going on? But it's the truth. It's like to be in a kitchen, really like to stand on your feet for 12 to 15 hours a day, 5 to 7 days a week, like constantly working, like, you know what I mean? Like it takes a certain kind of person to really do that. And a lot of us get off on it, you know? And, you know, for me, I did read it in my book when I was a kid. Like I was crazy. I mean, I was off the wall crazy. And when I got in the kitchen, it really was like this soothing, like, you know, like we like to say it's like a controlled chaos. That's like how we, you know, in the kitchens. And it's you can, like Frank was talking about the video, the intensity, you know what I mean? Like from an outsider, it's like, oh, that's crazy. It's awesome. But when you're in it, it's almost like there's like this ooh in your mind. It just kind of, you know, when the restaurant is busy and there's no problems and there's no fires to put out, I'm extremely anxious. When I have a broken dishwasher and my, you know, I have to fire people and it's not that busy and I got to work to earn it, I feel good. You know, I'm in mode. I get in mode. It's like this crazy, you know, I mean, I literally wake up and I eat anxiety for breakfast every day and I get into the kitchen and it starts to just mellow. It's like Groundhog's Day every day.
To this day,
every day.
Frank, you're smiling. What's your reaction?
You know, absolutely, on all levels. You know, as an owner, you know, of a restaurant, you have so much stress of, you know, again, if it's busy, if it's not busy, who's working, not working, you know, hiring, firing, all those things play into it. When you're a cook, the stress is fitting in as well, and really learning your craft. And then when you put all that together, you got to sit there and say, okay, am I part of the group? Am I part of the gang out there? Do you get invited to events? Do you do things outside? And that's another stress level of like being accepted by your peers. The people are like saying, am I the best? Am I as good as, am I keeping up with the Joneses? And as a matter of fact, so, you know, there's a lot that plays into it, but you know, it's, I guess how you deal with it. You know, I mean, certain types, I gravitate to business all the time. I lose my mind in the business. I just go, the more I work, the less I think about what I, you know, that bothers me. So we all do that, I guess. It's, you know, we get lost into the business, and it helps. It's medication. Work is, you know, just get there and just go ahead and just churn it out, and then you're tired, you go to bed.
And you also, after all these years, you still feel this way about it.
Oh yeah. Never. It's part of me. You know,
right?
I wear it like this T-shirt.
Kat, I'm curious to know, and maybe the answer is just completely not. But are there any observations that break down along gender lines as you look at the surveys you've been getting? Are there things that seem more common to men in the business and more common to women in the business?
So I didn't ask what people's gender was when I put out the survey, because I think, you know, feelings are universal. But the people who, you know, there was a section where people could write anecdotally about things. I've definitely heard from female chefs who, you know, there's always that added pressure of having to prove that you're as good as the boys. And, you know, they're doing the exact same job. And then there's this whole other layer of having to prove themselves. I've also heard from, you know, anecdotally from some of them talking about having to deal with postpartum depression if they've had a child, like afterwards, and all the issues of that. I mean, these women are superheroes to me because they're dealing with everything that the male chefs are, plus, you know, the sort of added physical things that happen, but they cannot, and perhaps women most of all are not allowed to admit to any of this publicly because they're afraid of being thought of as weak. So while, you know, it might be, you know, okay for a man to eventually say I'm dealing with these, the women never speak up publicly because they feel that they just can't, because they're afraid they'll betray their gender, because they just can't be seen as having any weakness. So that's just an added layer of stress.
It's so interesting to hear you say that, because I definitely, in interviews that I've done with people, excuse me, you know, people have said to me, women have said to me, and also people who are gay have said to me, you know, when I got into a kitchen, I had to prove myself twice. I had to prove myself as a cook, and then I had to prove myself as a, you know, a woman or as a homosexual. Like, there was this, I've heard this countless times over the years. Jimmy, you wanted to get in?
Well, I didn't have a point off of what you were just speaking about, but listening to everybody, and, you know, one of the common themes is a serenity and or adrenaline. And I was thinking about other businesses that have this kind of stimulus, you know, and this is maybe a question more suited for Kat. But it made me think of, like, you know, we work with a lot of people in the theater business and the restaurant business. And I was thinking about, like, curtain goes up businesses, meaning the show always goes on with or without you. And then I was thinking that, coincidentally, there's a lot of team activities in those businesses. So maybe professional sports, maybe live theater, things like that. So, you know, Chefs with Issues is the new one, but maybe is there something after that? Have other people from other industries written into you about this?
Oh, absolutely. I put the call out to writers as well, because, you know, they have to, if they're going to really write authentically about that, they have to go along for the ride, whether it's going out after, whether, you know, spending some of the lifestyle there. The other people I talk with a lot are farmers. It's something like, I went into deep research at one point on this, something like twice the average suicide rate of the general population because of what they're dealing with. There is absolutely no break from being a farmer. You can't take a day off. You don't get that. So, you know, I've definitely heard from all of those aspects. There are a lot of, in addition to people in the kitchen, I've been hearing a lot from restaurateurs and owners of businesses too, because that's the sort of double whammy of having to be, you know, a lot of chef owners are feeling it because they're getting it from all fronts. But yeah, I'm going to say writing is, because it's, you know, you're making something from nothing absolutely every time you get there. And I see Andrew nodding his head there.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's, I haven't brought it up just because it hasn't come up, but I mean, I would call it a very low grade version of it, but I've suffered from OCD, you know, I realize now my whole life. It was low, and I don't take medicine for it anymore. I did for a while, but, you know, writing is also, you know, the funny thing about writing and cooking, you know, everyone thinks about how social it is, but the actual act of cooking, what you do as a cook is you may be surrounded by people. That is a lonely day. Your universe is a cutting board, and the bowl next. You know, it's a lot of your day is very focused on your task, I think. And, you know, I've often thought of there's an analogy between sort of the screen, the laptop screen, you know, and like the prep station, you know. So, yeah, no, writing is it's hard. But that, I mean, we're I mean, I'll move off of that. But it's an ongoing challenge, you know, and I think the loneliness of it to me is something that's really something I've never, I think it's why I've done so many collaborations in my career is, you know, I don't like being alone all day. It's leads to, you know, bad places sometimes. Frank, you look like you had something to say.
Well, yeah, you know, it's we're in the restaurant business, of course, and theater business, you know, you go live. You're ready. You know, you're live. So you got, you know, all day you're doing prep, yes, but all of a sudden you're going live. There's guys that I see, they're addicted to Red Bull and on these five-hour energy things that, you know, that also puts so much stress on their body. They don't know why they're moving. Their hands are moving. You got to be busy. Otherwise, they're going to be like climbing the walls. So, well, you know, that stress of being live and having to perform better than yesterday is on everyone. I mean, in the theater, you know, if you're not, you're marking the show, right, they say. So I believe that, you know, we have this tremendous stress of all day of performing and showing, looking for that gratification. That one customer that has that bad evening, it ruins it. We're like, I go home and sometimes and I'll hear something and I go, oh my God, and I just can't get to sleep. I just start thinking about it. I said, well, the next day I come in like a horse. I come like a bull and I start fixing everything. And I put up the wall. I start welding stuff and putting everything up. That's not going to happen again, you know. But that's, you know, that's me.
What, we've got a couple of minutes left here before we shift into our closing dialogue, we'll call it. But, you know, Kat, what, you know, you've said on your site you're not sure sort of what the end game is yet. You maybe there's a conference or there's a foundation, maybe there's some, you know, in terms of what's going to happen with this material. But what are your thoughts about this as you, you know, 500 plus responses is extraordinary. I mean, it's what, it's, we're 14 days into the year.
Yeah, that all happened in the course of about 10 days. So, you know, people are asking me what's next. And to manage my own anxiety, I don't have a lot of answers for that because I know 10 years ago when I was, you know, less good about taking care of myself, I would be, I want to do this and this and this. So I'm just trying to manage my own expectations and anybody else. I know what I'm good at, which is telling stories, helping other people tell their own stories. People trust me because I will protect their anonymity and they know that, and I'm not going to judge anyone. So, and I'm good at getting people to talk about things. So I'm, you know, I can do those parts. The things I'm not as good at are, you know, sort of logistics, organization and stuff. So I'm starting, luckily people have started to reach out and say, hey, we have, you know, a foundation that addresses these kind of issues. The Heirloom Foundation out of Chicago, Curtis Duffy is part of it. And the people from Bad Wolf Coffee have reached out and they're going towards some of the same ends to, you know, start to talk to chefs coming up as they're young about, you know, changing kitchen culture for the future to make it a healthier place. So I'm looking to other organizations who do this, who know how to fundraise, who know how to organize and just try to have, you know, some sort of centralized resource where people can know that, you know, they're not the only ones out there, whether they can talk, they can get help as they need to. I think that that's just a really important thing to do.
And is there anything else you're looking to hear from people about other than simply at this point coming to chefswithissues.com and taking the survey? Is that the main thing people can do at the moment?
Yeah, that's the main thing people can do. I'd like to hear from more front of house people about this as well. What I really think is once I get enough, you know, sort of survey results, I'm trying to think of who I can take this to say like, look, you know, maybe there's something actionable that we can do this. Right now I'm just doing this as a labor of love, you know, out of my own pocket with on my own time. And, you know, that's, you know, I have to figure out how long I can sustain doing something like that. But what I'm looking for is somebody who can help me, you know, take it to the next level and really have it be something where say somebody is at the end of their rope, that they can come and get some sort of resources. You know, I'm asking people about how they're taking care of themselves if they have, you know, healthcare at work or whatever. So say somebody comes and they don't have insurance, they don't have anything around where they live, where we would be able to tell them, you know, look, you can tell us your story and we're going to get you help, to really have it matter in somebody's physical life.
Great. We're going to move on in just a second. Any closing thoughts from anybody on this topic?
Day at a time.
Maybe they should have something, you know, put together where people just go and speak to, you know, of the same idea, same like minds. Actually, just work it out, like in a, you know, group session. You know, it's it seems to help a lot of people, because once you say, "Hey, it's just not me," you know,
yeah, that's a good point. Like knowing you're not alone, I think
it's a huge thing just to say it out loud.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Knowing you're not alone, and also knowing it's not a short term fix. Right. The short term fix could be the first, you know, 1 week detox in drug and alcohol addiction, or you know, a 30-day stay somewhere. But really, the art of wellness is a pursuit that is much, much deeper than that, and requires a participation on a higher level, in my opinion, than I see on a good amount of stimulus out there that touches on these lines.
Okay, with that, thank you all. We are going to take a couple of minutes here. And again, we didn't want to put any of our guests on the spot with this today. But, you know, and normally this show, we would at the beginning of the show be touching on the big story or two of the week. This week, there was no bigger story, I would say, than the Per Se review in the New York Times. You know, we're only two episodes in, but Jimmy and I have been very clear that this is not a restaurant show. It's not a restaurant review show. This is a show about chefs and the world of chefs. Excuse me, but, you know, there's no bigger chef, or, you know, maybe there's chefs at the same level, but, you know, than Thomas Keller in the United States. And it was a huge occasion for the Times to take away two stars. I will just put on the table that Thomas is somebody I know. We don't hang out, but I did a book about the Bocuse d'Or, which he's very involved in, and got to spend some time around him and his organization. Pete Wells is someone I don't know. He's somebody I've emailed with on occasion, and that's always been a very pleasant experience. We are going to do a show on the topic of chefs and critics. That will be our next live show, which is on January 28th. Next week, I'm going to be away, but we have pre-taped a show, and to make up for it not being live, we got David Kinch to do an interview about his new restaurant in Los Gatos, California, the Bywater. So that will be next week's show. In the meantime, there on the Weekend Review program that Aaron Fairbanks and Jack Inslee do here on Heritage, you can hear them discussing the review with Joshua David Stein, who is a critic for The Observer, and his thoughts and analysis of it. But what I think, you know, coming from the point of view of this show, you know, Jimmy and I were talking the other day, and, you know, my comment was, you know, it reminded me of the old Chris Rock routine about the O.J. Simpson verdict, you know, where he said, black people are too happy, you know, white people are too mad. I feel like there's this huge disconnect, and Jimmy and I both have had dozen and a half people each the last 36 hours, 48 hours.
Yeah, and it's been longer than that than we've been having this conversation.
Right. But, you know, there's this feeling, you know, things that the chefs feel are, you know, that a lot of them feel like there's a randomness to when places get reviewed. There is sort of a desire to put a stake through the heart of fine dining. You know, right on the heels of the review, there was a piece in Grub Street that said this is another nail in the coffin. Ryan Sutton went up with a piece about pricing and took a dig at Per Se within 24 hours of the review or so. You know, for chefs, this adds up to a lot of the ones, at least that we have spoken to, and this is all I'm doing is relaying this, that they feel like there's this concerted agenda that runs counter to sort of classic fine dining out there.
Right.
They don't understand why certain places get more time to sort of gestate before they get reviewed, and some places get months. You know, Amos Fakahani wrote an open letter to Pete Wells. He's sort of a villain to the writer community. He's sort of a folk hero to a lot of chefs out there.
Yeah, some of the other things that we've heard about is, you know, the star system in question, perhaps. One of the larger ones we've heard recently is, you know, Superiority Burger and Per Se ending up with the same star rating. And, you know, these are from people in the know that know how to read between the lines. And it seems confusing to a good amount of people. And so that's a pretty big one.
Yeah. So these are all, like I say, there's, you know, maybe it doesn't matter that a lot of chefs are sort of confused or feel alienated. You know, what to me is sort of sad is I feel like there are enough issues. This is my chefs with issues. There's enough issues out there that I think chefs are not able to hear whatever constructive content there might be in reviews because they have these sort of personal feelings about the state of affairs, what they perceive as the state of affairs. So we're hoping, I don't know who will come on, we're going to hope to get maybe one or two current critics if they want to phone in and maintain their, you know, anonymity. That's fine. Maybe we'll get one or two former critics to come in. We'll have some chefs, and I think it's just, you know, an open dialogue around this topic.
Yeah, well said.
Okay. A couple of just quick housekeeping notes. Do you own a knife company or a chefware business or a cooking school? Here's a thought. Sponsor The Front Burner. We don't have a sponsor yet. We're a brand new show. You can email us to talk about that at hosts, H-O-S-T-S, at frontburnerpodcast.org. We want to thank our engineer, Liz Smith, for piloting the ship today. Also, thanks to Storefront Music for our theme song, Heavy Metal Gumbo. If you have any feedback or you're a chef with an idea for a segment, write to us at hosts, again, H-O-S-T-S, at frontburnerpodcast.org. You can visit me, Andrew, at Tokeland.com, and follow me on Instagram and Twitter at ToklandAndrew. And you can visit Jimmy and enjoy his food and hospitality at the Red Cat Restaurant in New York City, and follow him on Twitter at RedCatNYC or Instagram at Chef Jimmy Bradley. Thank you for listening again. Next week, we have a special pre-taped episode with Chef David Kinch and also an interview with three sous chefs on the topic of the state of the sous chef 2016. We'd like to now thank our guest, Kat Kinsman. Look for her book, High Anxiety. And please visit chefswithissues.com and take that survey. We think it's important and a really great thing she's doing. Frank Crispo at Crispo Restaurant here in New York City. And Jesse Schenker of The Gander and Reset, also in New York. And by all means, read Jesse's book, All or Nothing. It's incredibly raw. I'd almost use the word naked in its honesty and its just lack of concern for really anything except laying your story out there. It's a book I have a lot of admiration for. I'm Andrew Friedman.
I'm Jimmy Bradley.
And we'll see you back here next week on The Front Burner.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.